Hey, Moment Maker, let's get real in real time.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Marketing Cloudcast, a podcast by Salesforce where we hear from digital marketers, authors, thought leaders, industry experts, and really anyone who wants to sit down on a hangout and talk marketing with us. I'm Megan Collins, now Megan Hostetler, and I'm here with my good friend and wonderful co-host, Tina Razul.
Hey, everyone. We are back in our fifth episode of our Moment Maker series, where we uncover how marketers create experiences that truly resonate with their customers. Over the last few episodes, we've talked a lot about the different important pieces of creating these moments, like building a framework, harnessing and activating data, and doing this all in real time. Now, in today's episode, we are going to focus on a beautiful thing called ROI, return on investment. And as more people start to talk about ROI, especially in the terms of marketing moments, we found that ROI is essential. And in the simplest terms, it's really what is the amount of the return on investment that really allows us to invest time to create these marketing moments. And we'll be unpacking that in today's episode.
Now, Tina, I know for us as marketers personally, ROI is something that's always top of mind. So wanted you to share, you know, what does ROI look like in your day-to-day job?
Yeah, as an international marketer based out of our Asia Pacific region, we focus on a lot of marketing activities that really have the highest impact because in the regions, there are less resources. There tends to be smaller budgets. So creating and focusing on a plan against the goals set and really making sure that we're monitoring that on an ongoing basis really allows us as marketers to really be intentional with how we spend our time and energy.
So we know this is a tough subject, and that's why we brought in the best of the best. So in this episode, we have three experts who each share a different perspective on ROI. So we'll first hear from Anand Kishore. He's the CEO and co-founder of Aspire IQ. He's going to talk about the fundamentals of a community and how it can unlock really valuable insights. We'll then hear from Doug Morneau. He's the author of a book called Three Big Lies on how to strategize where to invest your marketing dollars to really squeeze out every single penny there. And then we have Mike McGurk. He teaches marketing at Babson College, and he'll touch on the value exchange with customers and how acting on that information in the right way is what will create the highest return on investment. So let's go ahead and get started. We'll bring on Anand Kishore. He's going to talk about the foundations on measuring marketing and building communities. At Aspire IQ, Anand plays an instrumental role helping enterprise brands transform their businesses via the power of brand communities. Anand is passionate about recent shifts in marketing that force brands to reevaluate how they engage their audiences in the peak of this social era and start to stand out in this, of course, increasingly competitive landscape. Here's Anand.
It's fascinating to see how the consumer market has evolved over the last, you know, decade. What we've noticed is that the brands that are winning today are brands that are in many ways going back to basics, going back to the core of what it means to build a brand, which is to build community and build relationships with people and do so in a more organic and authentic way. And then, you know, over time, that becomes more of a snowball that can really scale. So, you know, I think one example of that is a company like Glossier, which, you know, really started out as a blog for women to connect and learn about different cosmetics products. Emily Weiss, the founder, really nurtured this community, and it was a super rabid, really excited community around this topic. And that then became a brand over time as they started to layer in products. But they started out as a community. And even today, if you talk to them, they would say that they are a community first business that happens to sell products. And so I think really flipping the framework here to focus on these relationships and focus on real connectivity with your consumer is what's going to empower brands to differentiate and stand out over the course of the next decade, in our view.
Yeah, I think so too. And I like that example as well. And when you talk about, you know, how things have shifted and you had mentioned communities, how do you measure, like what KPIs would you look at to know that what you're doing there is successful and you're really resonating with your customer?
One of the benefits of where we are today in terms of the technology stack is that a lot of the foundational elements of what's required to measure and glean insight exist. There's a lot of infrastructure around, you know, being able to understand the impact that different strategies can have on your business. So I think the first step is to really make sure that you've implemented those systems, right? So being able to issue affiliate links, being able to issue coupon codes, having a robust system to be able to measure, you know, different ad channels, all of that is foundational. I think the piece of community that's really interesting and powerful is typically when brands tap into their community and engage them and invest in them, you're finding that community-driven growth can be dramatically higher LTV and better retaining as well. So people that are coming in through referrals or recommendations from your community tend to be higher quality leads or prospects than people that are coming in through a cold advertisement. It's this idea that it's not just about how much revenue you're generating from an individual. It's about how much revenue is that individual then influencing down the funnel? How much are they, you know, generating for you through recommendations or referrals? And I think being able to put all that together and look more holistically at performance is something that we see, you know, the best brands doing today.
I like that kind of thought process. So do you have any examples of maybe brands that are using different forms of marketing based on the different stage that they are in the life cycle? I mean, would you go about them differently?
The thing that's really interesting about your communities, effectively, you know, community is a proxy for high value relationships, right? Like these are people that orbit your brand in various ways and can have an impact on your brand in various ways. So they can be, you know, customers, they could be VIPs, they could be affiliates, they could be content creators, thought leaders, ambassadors, celebrities, and there are a lot of personas, obviously, that orbit any business. And then the ways that you can generate value from these folks can be really broad as well, right? So it's not just about how much they're buying from you, but it can also be, you know, are they giving you product feedback? Are they, you know, advocating for you? Really, the brands that we see that are very sophisticated are looking at their relationships more holistically and saying, this person might just be a first-time customer, but you know, they posted on social right after making a purchase. They seem to be in our demographic. Let's go engage with them and nurture that relationship. One of the ways we frame it is brands that invest in their people, not just their channels, are going to be the ones that really succeed going forward. And I think it's a great example of looking at a customer and saying, it's not just about how much money can we extract from you, but what can we provide? What value can we provide to you beyond just our product that would make you feel more engaged and more tied to us as a business? And in the long run, the way that plays out is those customers end up being much higher LTV. They're just much more embedded. They feel like they're part of your business and they end up being much more engaged.
Yeah, that's interesting too. And you're wanting to engage with these customers. You want to give them the best things you have in your back pocket. But in order to understand how and what to engage with them, you look at your community and really bank on that piece of your business to inform you on how to engage.
That's exactly right. I think that's a really, really succinct way of saying it. In many ways, your community is a conduit to growth and retention, right? The more you can tap into them for insight, for, you know, referral, for content, the stronger the foundation of your business will be. And so, yeah, we really think about community as the foundational piece of any company.
Yeah. So how do you begin to build one? So let's say I am Joe Schmo Company and I don't have a community right now. How do I get started?
Yeah, I think the first step to building a community is really about identifying people that are orbiting your business that matter. So we've spent a lot of time in terms of our technology stack building out systems and analytic systems to help identify interesting high value people, you know, across the web, really, that might be relevant to our customers. But obviously, there's a lot of different ways to identify these people. It could just be somebody who is a regular purchaser, or somebody who comes to a lot of your events, or somebody who provides a lot of feedback. you know, odds are if you're running a business, these people already exist and they are already fans of what you're working on, and they've raised their hand in some capacity saying that they are a supporter. And the first step to building a community is identifying those people and investing in them and facilitating whatever they're already doing with you on your behalf. And so, you know, oftentimes building a community can seem really daunting, but the first step is really oftentimes already taken care of by your community members. They're already doing the things that you probably want to invest behind. And so really what it is identifying them and then facilitating their ability to do more of it.
Okay. Do you have any like real world examples from some of the brands?
One fun example that's a little bit different in a different vertical, but also, you know, it's a consumer product, although I think they're moving more enterprise now, is a company called Notion. So they're a note-taking app that's done really well over the last few years. And one of the examples that we heard from their head of marketing, which is really awesome, was this idea that they had somebody who's such a fan of the product that they ended up translating the entire help section from English to French and just sent in a note to their support channel saying support@notion.com and said, hey guys, FYI, here's your entire support section in French. Obviously, that's a very special example, and I'm sure that's probably very rare, but I think it's a good example of, you know, I think keeping an eye out for people that are excited about your business and having an open mind and engaging with those folks and understanding why are they excited, and then, you know, augmenting whatever they're talking about and really putting resource behind that as well. You know, I think, you know, the Glossier example, oftentimes that's just the very baseline version of that would be content creation. So somebody buys product and posts on social, that is valuable to the brand. And so oftentimes it tends to be the next step is their team reaches out and says, hey, we love that content. Would you be interested in creating more? Even though you're asking as a brand for your community member to do something on your behalf, the counterintuitive thing about that is by asking, you're actually making them feel really great. They feel like they have value and they feel like they're a part of your business. And that ends up in the long run being great for both parties.
And if brands are starting to do that now, let's say they're either are started a couple of years ago or really in the midst of building that community now, where do you think they're going to be in like 10 years? Do you think that's going to be the foundation of how we market later on?
If you were to break down what a brand is just a community of people that share a story about something. The brands that are going to be relevant over the next decade are brands that are going to really take a grassroots approach. And again, I think I said it earlier, it's in many ways, it's back to basics, right? It's things that allowed brands to succeed originally, which are about real relationships, trust, you know, authenticity, connection. Those are the elements that allowed companies to thrive. And now it's just happening at much faster pace at the internet scale, right? And so being able to do that online across a variety of different platforms and channels, you know, that's really, in our view, the future of brand building.
And it may work different for different companies. I mean, everyone will kind of have a different strategy. So what I'd love to do with you is this segment called Getting Real in Real Time.
Hey, Moment Maker, let's get real in real time.
And what it is we ask our guest a time when they either struggled or had a tough situation, whether it's a reorg on their team or you're in the midst of a digital transformation. There's so many things that come out of left field when you're in marketing. So I wanted to get real and see if you had any moments like that that come to mind that you think would be interesting to share with our audience.
You know, the early days of starting this business was really tough. You know, we're in a market at that time that was seen as being very non-VC backable. You know, we found it really challenging to, you know, raise our seed round, and we had to, you know, really struggle to kind of keep the lights on, so to speak. I think what ended up happening through that period was, at that time, it was brutal in terms of being able to stay lean and continue to build product and iterate on our customer feedback and do all the things that you need to do as an early stage startup without having really any resourcing at all. But I think it really allowed us to focus on the things that mattered the most, which is customer feedback and ensuring that we were building things that really had an impact, you know, for our community. And you know, as a result of it, we actually ended up getting to profitability as a Series Seed enterprise software company, which I think is pretty unusual. And it was kind of a trial by fire kind of thing where we had to, we didn't have a choice. And we, as a result of that, we ended up being super lean and really scrappy in terms of how we built the business in the early days. And I think that was, you know, in retrospect, a great thing, but certainly very, very challenging at the time to go through.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. It's always interesting to hear just kind of like getting real and raw of like, when is the time that you've struggled? Because you know, everyone listening is going to relate. I mean, maybe they don't have, they aren't building a business, but they can relate to having low resources or, you know.
Exactly. I think that maybe just to summarize that, it would be, it's exactly that. I think the lesson that we learned was just that resourcing does not equate to success. And what does equate to success is focus and having an open mind and listening to your constituents. So, you know, if it's your customer or if it's your, you know, your employees or whoever you're trying to work with, really paying attention to what they're communicating and having ruthless focus in trying to make them successful is what's going to lead to long-term success, not how much money you have in the bank.
That's true. And that's a good point too. I mean, something that I've learned is, you know, sometimes you get feedback and it's not the feedback that you wanted on maybe a really exciting idea you have or a project, but they're only giving you this feedback because they probably care and they probably want to make it even better. So I think just having that mindset of bringing in other people's ideas can really make something beautiful. So obviously worked out in your favor. So congratulations there. If you had one takeaway that you wish that guests would take from this when it comes to how to build a relationship and something that they just can't miss. They need to be doing this if they're going to succeed in the future of this new world of marketing. What would that be?
I think, you know, without being too cliche, I think it really does come down to just being willing to do the unscalable. There's so much automation in general. And I think that's obviously been a huge boon to businesses of all types. Our view is that the pendulum is going to swing the other way and that it's actually the stuff that's unscalable, that's more human and more connected, that now that we've kind of got this infrastructure in place to do the scalable, you know, the next phase is how do you scale the unscalable? How do you actually, you know, bring more of a human touch to your day-to-day interactions with your customers, with your partners, with your employees, with, you know, your community, and do that in a way that, you know, is authentic is the other piece.
Now, Anand talked about how it's really important that we build communities and relationships with people in an organic and authentic way. And when we focus on these relationships and the connectivity we have with our consumers, it really allows us to differentiate and stand out, which helps influence that return on investment that we all strive for. Our next guest is Doug Marnot, and he's going to share how different marketing tactics really provide the best ROI.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about return on investment, as mentioned earlier, you know, there's the most simplest term of, you know, the return on investment. But I like how Anand kind of took it and thought of it more of lifetime value and how you can lean on your communities, how you can measure the growth of your communities. In what Doug Marnot, who we're going to have on next, again, thinks of ROI just a little bit differently. So his unique perspective comes with 32 years of driving ROI, even through an economic crisis back in 2007. He even wrote a book called Three Big Lies, which became an international bestseller. He hosts a podcast called Real Marketing Real Fast, and he consults with clients wanting to expand B2B and B2C sales in the United States using rented email lists, sponsored email lists, social media, influencer marketing, and online advertising. He's all about that quick ROI versus, you know, the long-term gain that Anand mentioned earlier. So to start off, I wanted to understand more about these quick ways to drive ROI. And here's what he had to say.
Well, how this media differs from other types of media. So if we compare it to pay-per-click advertising. Now, I'm going to tell you up front, I mean, we use all the tactics. This is just one. But I consider email that does the heavy lifting. So if you run a pay-per-click campaign or another digital campaign, you're really dependent on the amount of inventory that's out there and the number of people that are searching for product or service or solution that you're solving. And where this is different, you know, I don't know if you're a football fan, but if you think of, you know, your home base, San Francisco, right? So you look at the 49ers, they have an average attendance in their stadium of 70,000 people. So my example is, imagine 70,000 people that are avid raving football fans, which those guys are. You could send an email to them and that email will be delivered to them within 30 minutes. All 70,000. So you're not getting, you know, 500 clicks a day or 1,000 clicks a day. You're seeing 70,000 people in an instant. So if your company is saying, hey, you know, sales are low, we're struggling to get back up and running, what you can't afford to do is take a campaign that's going to take 6 months to bring you up to speed. And so that's what we did when they had the big financial meltdown, 2008, 2009, is we went back to our publishing partners and we said, hey, we'd love to keep working with you. We'd also love you to reduce your pricing so we can keep sending you more clients, and we will double our budget with you. So all my clients doubled their budget once. It worked extremely well. So they doubled it again. So we four times their budget and eight times our reach, while most people were kind of hiding and hoping things would blow over. And they just did extremely well.
And that's a good point too. Is like, you know, the people who maybe aren't going to come out on the other side of this on the up and up are the people who do brush things aside and maybe stop marketing. But a lot of what we've been hearing is that you can't just stop. It needs to move forward. So I think that's a great idea. And you talked about budgeting a little bit and how, you know, it grew to eight times return. Tell me a little bit about what people or what marketers need to be doing as far as budgeting.
I'll tell you, the way that this works best really is for an established company that's already working and spending money on digital advertising. They may or may not have an agency, but they're already committed to advertising. This isn't something I'd recommend for the first thing to do out of the gate. This is something I would say, okay, take some of your existing budget and carve it off and test this and then compare the results to what you're getting. And what you'll often see is if you're already doing pay-per-click and you're already doing social media advertising, when you start sending email to the same audience, you'll see a higher lift across all of your efforts.
And are you seeing, or just general thoughts on, just because these ad spends are decreasing in today's world of COVID-19 response and things, is this kind of a second best plan too? Just because they are taking ad spend away from the advertising side of it?
Well, I just think it's a different opportunity that you need to test. I mean, as any good marketer, you need to be looking at what's working, what's not working, and not keep, you know, you can't just always follow the crowd. You know, there's a great book written years ago called Blue Ocean Strategy. And the idea was, you know, stay away from the blood in the ocean where the sharks are feeding and go someplace else. And so this really gives you an opportunity to get very super niche and test a direct response medium that can give you very quick results. Like the results are so fast that it's not uncommon for me to get a phone call from my client at like 6:35 in the morning. So we know the email's gone out at 6 o'clock West Coast time, because that's when the stock market opens or the venture capital guys are in, and they're going, did the email go out? I'm going, why? Because we haven't got any phone calls yet. I'm going, seriously, this is the very first day of the campaign. The email went out 5 minutes ago. Phone me at the end of the day. We'll have a discussion. Then I never hear from them again until they renew their contract. So it's a, it's a super big hit. It's super instant. So on that side of it, you need to be prepared to have a bunch of traffic show up to your server.
So I'm starting to catch on that ROI is important, of course, and there are unique ways to drive it and still remain relevant and create those marketing moments that really resonate with customers. Now, our next guest is Mike McGurk. He teaches at Babson College and has been working in the marketing and analytics field for over 30 years, with the first 25 years working in the industry. So he worked at startups and marketing analytics service companies, working with brands like General Motors, Harley Davidson, and CVS, to name a few. And only more recently, in the last 5 years, he's decided to teach. He teaches both at a graduate level and undergraduate courses, all about marketing analytics. So now when you think about ROI, first thing at least I naturally think of is analytics. So how am I measuring the performance? So in this interview, you're going to hear Mike break down what marketing analytics is and why it's important to create these marketing moments.
There's got to be, you know, a value exchange, right? And it's got to be visible. It's got to be tangible. If consumers are going to be asked to provide information, you know, sometimes they're asked because you're asking through surveys, and sometimes they're not asked. It's just collected as they transact with a company. Then they have to see how that information is being used to make their experience better. And I just think in too many cases, consumers are getting disgruntled, and we're starting to see it, right? Forrester research is saying that customer feedback surveys are suffering from, you know, survey fatigue. You know, consumers are not responding at the level that they used to. But I think that can change if we can show, you know, from a business perspective that what they're telling us is materially changing the way we're operating.
So is that simply like if, let's say you're on a website and you have to fill out a form or something, would it be within that form to say how they're using the data there? Or are there any like unique techniques or things that you've seen that work well to provide that value exchange and clearly let them know what it's being used for?
I think you can start by giving them a sense of how you plan to use it, but it's not going to have the impact until they see it in action. If you were, you know, let's say you moved and you were forced to change, you know, cable operators. Mm-hmm. Right? And so wouldn't it be nice if when you called, you know, Comcast or called Verizon or whoever it is, wouldn't it be nice if they had a process in place that helped you make the right decision in terms of what's the right plan to meet my specific needs, right? In terms of my viewing interests. What if they would just implement even a 5-question survey, you know, as you're talking to the sales rep, where you share some information about yourself in terms of what you like to view. And then that is actually used to really align or map with the plan that makes the most sense for what your interests are. If I saw that as a consumer, that would tell me I can see how they're using the information.
Exactly.
You know, it makes so much sense. I'm moving away from distrusting them because I think all they're trying to do is maximize the sale, right? And sell me the most expensive plan. Instead, they're using my feedback to try to come up with the best plan to meet my needs. That's just going to go so far in terms of developing trust, and that development of trust is going to lead to, you know, loyalty down the road. So sometimes you have to be willing to measure things more longer term and not be so short term focused around measurement, because that particular example I just gave you, you know, you're probably going to leave some money on the table. You're going to, you know, talk some consumers into buying a less expensive package because it met their needs.
And that's kind of like a mind shift for marketers, right? Because I think marketers are ingrained to get ROI quickly or get see return quickly.
Yes, you're exactly right. There's just so much pressure.
Huge thanks to all of our guests for joining us on today's episode of our Moment Maker series, where we talk about return on investment and what that looks like when it comes to investing time to create marketing moments.
Yeah, Megan, what a great episode this was. Building off of this topic, in our next episode, we're going to share how we need to now build that dream team for marketing in the future. So for anyone who leads key marketing initiatives, whether it's in small or large organizations, or you're managing a team, we'll be talking about how you can ensure you're creating the right marketing moments for your organization. So we'll talk about how to be a rockstar marketer, what are the things that you need to think about to be able to scale when you have a small team, and how can we make sure we're partnering with the right organizations as well to help us scale.
Yes, we're really, really excited to continue this series. We got 2 more episodes. Hang on for the ride. It'll be fun. Thanks to our friends at Think Ahead Studios for editing this podcast. Thanks to Audible.com for the music and the wonderful Press Maxon for the jingle. Talk to you all soon.
Bye, guys.